560 KPQ.
This is The Agenda from News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern affecting you are open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
Twelve 16 at News Radio 560 KPQ. Good afternoon to you. Time for The Agenda one more time. 29 degrees in Wenatchee. Hang in there, friends. I'm going to make your life easier today. Consider this. Are you a civil person? Do you imagine that you've always been kind of civil? You know, polite, adult, considerate, adjustable. Or are you on the other hand? You know how they say on the other hand. Well, on that other hand, are you angry, opinionated, loud, abusive, convinced of certain items of your belief? Are you inflexible? Are you able to avoid facts? Can you live for days way beyond reason? Well, if that's the case, you should probably listen to our show if you can. I don't know how we're ever going to bring those two parties together, those two examples. All I want is an enjoyable dinner party, something that we all remember for the good reasons. Perhaps we could go into training or preparation, some sort of willingness to change, and the ability to hold one's tongue. How do you think philosophy can help? Well, I don't know. Philosophy means the love of wisdom. It's a way to study or examine fundamental problems like language, the mind, values, rational argument, systematic organization of thoughts. Philosophy is just a way to help you look at reality and understand it. No fears or opinions. You remember Cicero? Yeah, Cicero. Marcus Tullius Cicero. He was Roman. He lived right over there when Rome was all the rage and all the Rome. Well, he said philosophy is divided into three parts. Natural philosophy, that's physics and the laws of mass and energy. Moral philosophy, which consists of ethics and character and manners and a dissertation or two. And lastly, metaphysical philosophy, logic and abstract objects and subjects. So what are we talking about today? Well, it seems, and although I'm not the authority, it seems like we're going to be rolling around in number two, the moral philosophy. But to get the authority of the authority, to get the opinion of him, let's meet our very special guest. He's David E. Smith, the man with whom I will try to conduct a civil conversation. And how do we start? Well, first, let's be civil to one another. David E. Smith, welcome to KPQ, and you're on the air with me now, sir. How are you?
I am fine, Michael, and thanks for having me.
My pleasure. David E. Smith is going to be speaking in Kashmir on the 21st, that's Thursday, at 6 p.m. at the Public Library. In Winthrop on Friday the 22nd at 7 p.m. at the Winthrop Public Library. And at 1 o'clock on Saturday, February 23rd, at the Ephrata Public Library, talking about the art or the wrestling match that passes for civility when it breaks down. And we're gonna get our heads straight with the help of you, David E. Smith, so that we can be, if only for a moment or two, civil to one another. As you know, it's something that's becoming increasingly difficult, even just for conversations on the street. Do you agree?
I do agree. Absolutely. The time to talk about civility is now.
Well, you're going to give three talks on civility. I wonder how much you must have given this some good consideration, but what is it that you, what's your opener? What do you say to convince people that it can, in fact, be achieved?
Well, I open by telling my audiences essentially what my sources are for this. I've been teaching philosophy and world religions for about 20 years now. And so sometimes when people ask me what I teach, I say philosophy and religion. And sometimes I'm tempted to say I teach controversy, because virtually every lecture that I give is controversial. One of the things that I try to do in all of my lectures is help people understand both sides of everything. Whenever we're dealing with something that is controversial in our culture, I want people to understand the arguments on both sides, and I want people to understand why real people believe what they believe. When we understand why people disagree with us, it helps us to build a bridge of understanding. So I'm drawing on years of teaching these tough topics, what I call the big three: religion, ethics, and politics.
Well, at least you left politics to last. That's just, that's somewhat helpful, I think. Go ahead.
Right. Well, I'm also drawing on some published work on civility, but also on my own life experience. My life story is directly connected to the work that I do. I grew up in the world of fundamentalist Christianity, and as a younger adult, over about a 15-year period, I gradually evolved into a very progressive thinker in religion, and I had to have conversations all along the way with people as I was changing my mind. So I had to figure out who in my life could handle a conversation about a religious change of mind. And so in this presentation, I'm drawing on my own life experiences as well, both my successes and my failures when it comes to civility.
The challenges you faced when you tried to, I guess, first to tell your family and your friends that although you were still very interested in religion, it was no longer their religion that interested you so much. How was that received?
Well, I didn't have to be quite that drastic in the way I presented it, because I used the word evolution. I didn't really convert or deconvert. I just evolved very gradually into a progressive thinker. So it was a question of when I would change my mind about this particular aspect of Christianity or that particular aspect, could I share that particular with a particular family member or a friend? And I even had to face a professional fork in the road, because I was teaching at a liberal arts college at the time that had a religious affiliation, and I had become too liberal in my thinking to remain there. So it wasn't really, again, a matter of not being interested in your religion. It's this particular aspect and that particular aspect I no longer believe in based on evidence. And
so
my journey really was evidence-based.
You were dismissed because of your thoughts and your beliefs.
Yeah, a lot of people in my life just couldn't understand the change of mind, no matter how carefully I tried to explain it. So, and some of those conversations went well, and some of those conversations didn't go so well, and you kind of learn how to do it as you go along.
Often people are actually more welcoming the argument than any sort of discussion that may give them an insight into the other person's beliefs or the other person's actual position. What is it about us? What is it about our nature that we'd rather argue than get it right?
Oh, that's a fabulous question. The way that I pose that essential issue to my audiences is as follows. I say, do you value truth more than your own beliefs, or your own beliefs more than truth? Because I think it's safe to say everyone in this room right now is wrong about something. Is that a safe assumption? And everybody always agrees with me. Because we're all finite and fallible, right? We're limited and we're subject to error. And we have all discovered mistakes in our lives, and so the chances are pretty good that each one of us is wrong about some things right now. The problem is we don't know what we're wrong about. Because if we did, we would change our minds right now. And so this is a very fundamental question. Do I value truth more than my own beliefs, or my own beliefs more than truth? Because if I value my own beliefs more, then I will fight for them at all cost. But if I really value truth, then there's a part of me, even if I hold to some beliefs with deep conviction, there's a part of me that must say, I still could be wrong, because the depth of my conviction is no guarantee of truth. So I still have to retain an open mind to new evidence, new information, new perspectives that just might change my mind on this. But it's difficult, because our beliefs, again, about the big three, but even beyond religion, ethics, and politics, our beliefs give us a sense of identity and a sense of security. And so when someone challenges those beliefs, it can be upsetting for those reasons.
Are we in an age now where one's politics qualifies one for a certain religious experience and also shelters one from whether you believe the truth or not? You're sheltered from actually examining whether it's true or not.
Are you asking about the connection between religion and politics?
I'm asking about the nature of our minds to stick with something that we believe regardless of the facts.
Yeah, well, it's easy to do that. It's easy to do that. We're all raised with certain beliefs, and for many of us, the beliefs we were taught growing up just seem natural to us. I know as a child, the things I was taught about religion seemed self-evident. It seemed obvious, and I couldn't imagine why anybody wouldn't believe them. So we believe a lot of things because we were taught those things when we were younger. And many people are so occupied with the responsibilities of life. I mean, the average person probably doesn't take a lot of time to evaluate all the beliefs that they were given growing up. They're just trying to raise a family and go to work and pay the bills. And it's just easier sometimes, if those beliefs are working for us reasonably well, it's easier just to maintain them. But humans are truth seekers, and we are evidence gatherers, and that ought to be a priority for all of us.
Plus, finding the truth feels so good as compared to what you might believe or what you stumbled upon or what somebody else told you. Now we've scratched the surface of how difficult it is to deal with these big three, especially when dealing with someone who might disagree on any point there. But how do we remain civil when discussing these matters? That's a challenge that I think only practice can help with.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to give you the lecture here today, but
it's okay. You can start. You can do a little lecture.
Yeah, the way that I go about this is, basically, think of a metaphor of going to the doctor, right, when you're sick. We have to diagnose the problem, and then we have to prescribe some kind of cure. So I spend a lot of time with my audiences in this lecture trying to figure out why it is so difficult. Understanding why it's difficult to be civil is the first step. Because often these conversations take us by surprise, and we find ourselves behaving badly before we even realize what's going on. So understanding the causes can be very beneficial. And then I will also talk about some suggestions that we can do, some habits we can develop before we get into a conversation that may be contentious that will help to prepare us for it. I think some people are probably civil very naturally, but others, many of us, we have to be more intentional about this in understanding the causes of incivility and what I call ingredients in the recipe of civility.
And what would some of those ingredients be for someone who is not accustomed to being civil, or even maybe the thought has never crossed his mind, you know, I could be more civil about this, or I can just be argumentative and loud?
Well, I'll give you one of the ingredients in the recipe here. One of those ingredients I describe as our common humanity. Our common humanity. And this is something that in the world of philosophy we tend to do, because you and I live in a world now dominated by postmodernism that tries to focus overwhelmingly on differences between people, and then of course tries to inspire tolerance and respect for diversity. And those are good values. I embrace those. The problem is when we only focus on our differences, we forget that we're all human beings, and underneath those differences, there is a common humanity. And one of the things that we all share in common is what I call the process of belief formation. So if you're having a conversation with somebody about religion, ethics, or politics, and you disagree deeply, and you just cannot imagine how any reasonable person could believe what this other person believes, understanding how we human beings form our beliefs can be very helpful in building that bridge of understanding and feeling some empathy. So think of it this way. Whatever you believe about religion and contentious moral issues like abortion and the death penalty, and whatever you believe about politics, you didn't just sit in your living room one day and say, I'm just going to choose to believe these things. I think I'll choose to believe in the pro-choice or pro-life view. I think I'll just choose to believe that this party, political party, is better than that one. I think I'll just choose to believe there's a God or there isn't a God. That this is generally not how people form their beliefs about these things. Beliefs form within us very naturally as we live our lives and as we come under the influence of many different dynamics in society. So I probably believe some things because I was raised to believe them. I believe other things based on evidence. I've done research, or people have presented arguments to me that persuaded me. I probably believe some things because those things make me feel good and I've never taken the time to question them. The point is, the process of belief formation is the same for everyone. We come to believe things by living our lives and being exposed to all these different dynamics in society. So how can this other person believe whatever they believe? Because they've lived their life. They haven't lived mine. They were raised a certain way. They've been exposed to certain evidences and arguments to the extent that they put stock in that, that maybe I haven't, or vice versa. They've had experiences that have shaped their beliefs, and I haven't had those experiences. But this is how beliefs are formed, and when we understand that, we think, well, if I had lived that person's life exactly the way they've lived it, if I had been raised in that home and I had all their experiences, I just might believe what they believe. And so that is an example of a way that we can sort of get under the surface of our differences and feel some empathy for the other.
That's the voice of philosopher David E. Smith. Dave is going to be speaking in town at the Kashmir Public Library on Thursday at 6 p.m., in the Winthrop Public Library 7 o'clock on Friday night at 7 o'clock, and 1 o'clock at the Ephrata Public Library. That'll be Saturday, and you'll have the opportunity to hear his talk, which is called Civil Conversation in an Angry Age, which brings me to my next question, David, and that is, we've discussed how we as individuals growing up in different environments have a set of beliefs or things that we feel comfortable with. How much of a pressure cooker does the angry age put on all our beliefs to the point where we get a little frothy at the mouth?
Oh, the environment around us is definitely toxic right now, and that's why I have a passion to do this lecture across the state of Washington with Humanities Washington. That kind of thing is contagious, you know. When other people are uncivil, it's easier to get in the mud with them, and that's one of the causes of incivility that I want to talk about in the lecture. Is when other people are uncivil, it's easy for us to go there with them. But we have to be aware of that, and we have to have a vision for a better society. You know, sometimes political scientists and historians talk about politics in the United States in the 1980s and 90s, where certainly Democrats and Republicans disagreed deeply. But, you know, they say someone like Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill from different parties, they had their debates and they had their deep disagreements, and then they'd go out to dinner together when the day was done. That sort of thing, I think we need to hold that kind of a vision up in front of ourselves, because I think many of us, we want a better culture. We want a better society. We want to be able to hold to our beliefs and disagree, but we don't need to demonize the other person. And so, yeah, the environment around us makes it hard, but that's the reason why we need to pursue this intentionally.
You mentioned how people form certain beliefs, usually through a lifetime of experience, but you've probably also noticed that people like yourself have taken their lifetime experience and altered it. They've evolved their belief. It can be, that applies to folks with religious beliefs, and it applies to people. In fact, you can find pundits on television right now, conservatives who have become liberal, liberals who have become conservative, and they can speak to both sides of the issue, so they're valuable pundits. They speak on any subject, and from experience in both ways. What is it about the society of the angry age that makes us vacillate back and forth and change our opinion so quickly?
Well, I'd like to think that the people to whom you refer didn't change their minds quickly. In my case, it took me about 15 years to modify my religious beliefs. I took it very slowly, very carefully, very analytically, and my journey was almost exclusively rational. As I began to encounter evidences against the paradigm that I had been given, I couldn't ignore them. Now, I think you referenced people earlier who may just don't really want to know the facts or the evidences. Some of us have no choice but to pay attention to evidences that seem solid, that contradict beliefs that we have, and I'm one of those people. I can't ignore evidence. So I hope that when people have a change of mind, it is sincere, it is carefully researched and thought out, and in my case, my change of mind, even though it was evidence-based, it was very painful because of the impact it had on my friendships, in some cases my relationship with family, my employment at a religious institution. So certainly the angry age, I don't think it should make us change our minds. It should make us think about beliefs. But if we're going to change our minds, I think it ought to be done carefully and thoughtfully.
Civil Conversation in an Angry Age, coming up at 3 North Central Regional Libraries this month. A talk given by David E. Smith, philosopher, and the first one is the 21st at the Kashmir Public Library. Winthrop the next day, the 22nd at 7 o'clock, and then Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock at the Ufreda Public Library. When we come back, we'll talk more with David E. Smith. We've talked a little bit about politics, a little bit about religion. You don't even know what ethics is, right? Because you're a good American. We'll talk about ethics right after these words on News Radio 560 KPQ.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
Our time is 12:40 in the afternoon, 29 degrees in Wenatchee Town at this time. My very special guest is David E. Smith, philosopher. He's going to be speaking at the Kashmir Public Library on February 21st at 6 o'clock. That's a Thursday. At the Winthrop Public Library on Friday, February 22nd. That's at 7 o'clock. And then Saturday at 1 o'clock at the Ufreda Public Library. The name of his talk is called Civil Conversation in an Angry Age, which may sound nice and bookish, but at the same time, it's probably one of the great wrestling matches of our age. How do people with different beliefs manage to talk with one another? And that's where but we'll get to more on that subject. But of the three topics that drive us all crazy, David E. Smith, you mentioned politics, you obviously mentioned religion, but what are ethics and why are they so difficult for us to adhere to or agree upon?
Great question. I actually think, to begin with, we actually have a lot of common ground morally, we humans, much more so than people recognize. Again, we live in an age where we focus on difference and we're encouraged to be tolerant, which is good. But there are actually many issues, moral issues, on which many of us agree, regardless of our personal identity. But there is that list of moral controversies, things like abortion, the death penalty, gay marriage, gun control, all those things.
For some people, even divorce is a moral problem.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's often, in the context of conservative religion, it's often considered a sin. And so these big three areas, they have overlap. They are distinct, but they have overlap. So, I think most of us agree that you shouldn't murder or rape or rob the bank or any of that, so we forget how much we have in common. But these moral controversies are controversial for good reason. And that's because they require judgment. As a philosopher, I care about evidence and rational argument and all that. But in the end, these disagreements that we have over these moral controversies, we have because there are good reasons on both sides. And so that's why we have to think these things through carefully and learn to disagree well, because I don't think these controversies exist because one side has all the evidence and all the argumentation and the other side has nothing. If that were the case, we just might not have controversies.
You've probably seen conversations that are becoming less and less civil all the time, with one person just trying to convert the other one to his way of thinking. Not to understand what he's talking about, but to convert them to saying, you know, you're right, I never saw it that way, you're absolutely right, I've never met anyone like you, you made it so plain to me. And we think that these breakthroughs are going to come right there on the sidewalk. But in fact, yeah, having someone argue with you like that only makes you cling to your beliefs even stronger, or your ethics.
Yeah, that can certainly happen. When we enter into a conversation on an issue like abortion or the death penalty or gun control, with someone with whom we disagree, we need to decide ahead of time what kind of a conversation this will be. What is the purpose? And so what you just described is essentially debate, where one side, here's my point of view and here are all my arguments, and the other side gives theirs, and you try to critique the other guy's arguments, and he or she critiques yours, and both sides are trying to win. They're trying to say, my view is right, and I have better arguments on my side. There is a place for that. There is a place for debate in our culture. Even that can and should be conducted with civility, But there's another kind of conversation, and I think you were hinting at that a minute ago, and that's called dialogue. Dialogue and debate have overlap, but they are not the same thing. Debate, I'm trying to win. I want my view to prevail. In dialogue, I'm explaining my view, and I'm giving the reasons, and so are you. But instead of trying to win, we are sincerely listening to the reasoning that the other person gives with the intentional possibility of having a change of mind or just a modification of one's view. So debate and dialogue are both legitimate and both can be conducted with civility, but we have to decide ahead of time what is the purpose of this conversation. Even more fundamentally, we have to decide whether this person is a good candidate for a civil conversation.
Exactly.
Not everybody can handle, and this is something that I had to figure out in my journey in religion. Not everybody in my life was emotionally and or intellectually capable of the conversation. And I had to decide, you know, even the ethics of dumping my new beliefs on people who couldn't handle it. So we have to make sure the person with whom we're talking is a good candidate. And to be honest, it may be that I'm the one who's not ready for the conversation. Right? We always think, well, we'll be civil if the other person will just cooperate. But maybe they're ready for the conversation and I'm not.
Yeah.
So we have to make those judgments ahead of time.
David E. Smith lectures and is a member of the faculty at the University of Washington where he's a professor. But I imagine you find yourself in rooms with other philosophers now and again, Mr. Smith. Is that just like a debate ready to happen? When philosophers gather, they begin arguing immediately?
Well, I actually have the privilege now of doing adult continuing education full-time. So my audiences are full of highly educated, experienced adults who just love to learn, and they want to engage in these conversations about the big three that I teach. So I have people with degrees. I mean, I have lawyers and doctors and scientists and all sorts of people. And we have a great time interacting with each other. They, I think, learn something from me, but I learn from them all the time. And good philosophy should be interdisciplinary, so I listen to what they have to say, and they listen to what I have to say, and it's overwhelmingly a positive and constructive experience for all of us.
I know delving into the foundations of politics, religion, morality, ethics, all these things, is a difficult and sometimes daunting subject for people who had never studied philosophy, just never had it in college and never found it interesting. My point in raising that is it's a lot different to study the philosophy of all these topics, politics, religions, and ethics. Much different than it is from getting your speaking points from a disc jockey on the radio who tells you three things to believe or not believe that day. And those are your marching orders. That's all. You can remember one or two of them and manage to get through your day. But these are thoughts that didn't occur to you until someone on the radio or on television told you these were the topics of the day. These are your talking points. These are what we are going to be talking about to them. You know what I mean?
Yes.
How do we combat that? How do we keep our thoughts fresh, and how do we stay curious enough to be able to reject that as not enough information, too convenient?
Well, this is a real challenge. I give a lecture on media ethics. This is a real challenge in the way that media works and the judgments that journalists and news outlets have to make, first of all, about what stories to report and then how to report them. The media, various media, all the traditional media plus all the stuff online now, they have a tremendous impact on the way that people think. And again, as an educator, I always think that solutions begin with understanding. Understanding how the media work, having respect for it. We need to revive respect for the media. This is another problem with our culture now. The media are attacked constantly. And so we need to do a couple things, I think. Revive respect for the free press in a democracy. It's critical. But we also have to understand how media works, the judgments that are made about stories, how these things are presented, and the impact that these things have on us. Everybody knows that, you know, media reports are overwhelmingly negative, and there are all sorts of people involved in interpreting the negativity in media. But we have to just understand that We shouldn't allow media to create our worldview. We have a skewed view of the world if all we do is listen to those sound bites that you are describing.
David E. Smith, philosopher, is going to be speaking in town in Kashmir, Ifrit, and Winthrop coming up the weekend of the 21st. I'll have more to talk about with David right after these words on News Radio 560 KPQ.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
News Radio 560 KPQ. On the radio, on the web, on the app, and now through Alexa. How do you, KPQ?
How to be safe, comfortable, and secure driving in this winter weather and save a ton of money? Right now, you can save thousands on a great selection of low-mile, pre-owned, certified, all-wheel drive SUVs at Wenatchee Kia. With very few miles on them, they are still covered by Kia's amazing 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. The big difference between these and buying new, however, is the price. For example, a 2019 all-wheel drive Kia Sorento loaded with features like V6, third-row seating, a navigation and technology package that includes Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, rear camera display, blind spot collision warning with lane change assist, rear cross traffic collision warning, reverse parking distance warning, and a host of other features designed to help keep you and your family safe. The MSRP on the Sorento new was over $34,000, but you can buy it today for just $25,991, saving you over $8,000. Get to Wenatchee Kia today. Limited to stock, subject to prior sale. VINs posted at dealership.
At Pioneer Title, their roots go deep. A local family-owned and operated company serving North Central Washington since 1890. You can count on their meticulous team for unsurpassed customer care and their renowned blend of exceptional service. Every aspect of the title examination and the escrow process is done at Pioneer Title Company. They do not outsource. Let Pioneer Title put their years of experience to work for you. Visit them at the KPQ Home Expo at the Everything Real Estate section, March 8th, 9th, and 10th.
You support the communities where you live, work, and play every time you shop and save at Bi-Mart. Warm your tummy with Progresso Soups, now 3 for $5. Stay healthy with Bi-Mart vitamins and supplements and save 30% off. Please your pooch with Purina Dog Chow wet dog food, now $4.99 for 6 cans. And for cuddly softness, save on Snuggle Dryer Sheets and Fabric Softener. Shop local, spend local, stay local at your Northwest employee-owned Bi-Mart.
Awake Health in Ellensburg announces a brand new technology, a quicker way to shed those unwanted pounds safely and effectively for all skin types. It's called body contouring, and the process melts the fat cells right off your body. Using the technology of radio frequency, the body contouring treatment is comfortable, no downtime option for a slimmer stomach, thighs, and hips, plus cellulite reduction. Shape your body into a new you. Call Awake Health and set up an appointment today at 509-260-8922.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
It's 12:52. My very special guest is David E. Smith. He's a philosopher. He teaches at UW's Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. You'll be in Kashmir February 21st, Thursday night at 6 o'clock at the Public Library. In Winthrop Public Library, 7 p.m. on Friday, the 22nd, and at 1 o'clock the 23rd, which is a Saturday, at the Ifrata Public Library, speaking on the civil conversations in an angry age from the viewpoint of a philosopher and also from the teacher. David E. Smith, I was going to ask you if you had a favorite philosopher, and you'll probably mention someone I don't know, but that's all right. Make me feel bad and tell me about why this person is your favorite philosopher.
I'm not going to make you feel bad because I really don't have a favorite philosopher. I lecture. All of my courses are topical, and I draw on philosophers from throughout history and around the world. And I don't find that anyone has, you know, much of an advantage over the other. It's been said, of course, in Western philosophy that Plato is really the text, and everything after Plato is a series of footnotes on him, and there is some truth to that. But I really think we ought to draw on as many different sources as possible. There's wisdom throughout history. There's wisdom around the world, and that's how I do it.
The reason that he's giving this talk, Civil Conversation in an Angry Age, is becoming difficult increasingly difficult to have respectful conversations on any subject with anyone, friends, family, strangers, coworkers, and it's increasingly easy to just be unawares and drawn into an argument, and it's roaring after 15 seconds. You don't even know how it got started,
yeah.
And that happens a lot to us, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. These things take us off guard, so we have to be intentional about our civility. Sometimes we can prepare mentally because we know we're going to have a conversation with a family member, friend, neighbor, coworker. We know it's coming and we can prepare. But as you said, often we get kind of sucked into these conversations. So we can't necessarily prepare for those specifically, but we can think about civility when we're not in the midst of that, the battle, so to speak. And I think preparedness is something we will work on, we will develop throughout our lives so that we can increase the chance that we will have a constructive and respectful conversation with those with whom we disagree.
David E. Smith, thanks for being with us today. I really appreciate your conversation and your point of view and all the work you've done to come to this spot where you realize that we're in an angry age, but civil conversation is not dead. We must convert it into something we can use every day.
Well, thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed being on air with you, and I look forward to interacting with the audiences later this week.
Good luck when you get to Cashmere Fade in Winthrop. I appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you.
David E. Smith at News Radio 560 KPQ.
Tickets are now on sale for the Sweethearts for Kids Luncheon April 9th.